Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty, welcome back in hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Notre Dame is ranked eighth in the country after a big blowout victory over Navy. The Fighting Irish are 7-1 on the season. And now joining us is their sophomore running back, Jeremiah Love, who, by the way, has had a touchdown in each and every game this season for the Fighting Irish. He had two more to his total this past weekend up against Navy, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Jeremiah, appreciate the time. Congratulations on your success, and how you been?
Thank you. I've been pretty good.
Well, it was an interesting game to start on Saturday, right? You guys take that 14-0 lead, and then Navy, they fight back, and then you really opened up the game with your 64-yard touchdown run to make it 21-7. Just take me through that big touchdown run.
So play was inside zone, and coach is talking throughout, basically throughout the whole first half, you know, trust the run, trust your reads, and they call the play. The backer came down. He was free for a little bit, so had to, like, take a little stutter step and, you know, trust that the O-line will work up to him, and they did. And once that happened, you know, right off his butt, shooting to a touchdown.
Yeah, and we know what your speed is like because I know that you also competed in track in high school and you won the Missouri Class 5 state title in the 100 meter with the time of 10.76. I got to ask you because you make it look just so easy on the football field when you're just so much quicker than everybody else. When was it early on in your life that you realized, wow, I just have an abnormal amount of speed?
I would say it was when I started running track. All my life I've been pretty fast, but like I've never known like I was like exceptionally fast, like faster than other people. So when I first started running track, it was my sophomore year. I was just coming into track, you know, trying to, you know, keep my endurance up for football. And it just happened that I went far in track and ended up winning state my sophomore year. And initially it was just, you know, stay conditioned for football, but doing that and, you know, competing in track, that's when I really found out, you know, that I'm faster than a lot of other people. And you know, that obviously translates to the football field, but it was my sophomore year. That's when I really found out.
Do you believe you're the fastest player in college football?
Yes. I would say so, yes. If you put me on the line with anybody, I'm going to beat them.
I love that answer. And here's the other thing. You know, I know last year you were listed at 197. Mm-hmm. This year you're listed at 210. So you put on weight, and you still haven't lost any speed. Was that surprising to you when you put on a good amount of weight that you're still as quick as you've been in the past?
Nah, I feel like I'm quicker now. Because I put on just straight muscle. So good weight. And I've only got more powerful, stronger, and faster. So, yeah.
Jeremiah, love with us. I know that in the past you've said that growing up, Barry Sanders was really someone that you studied and you watched a lot of highlights. Now, he stopped playing football, and we all know the legendary Barry Sanders in 1998. You were born in 2005. So how and what were the reasons, other than he's just one of the greatest running backs ever, that really drew you to watching a ton of Barry Sanders tape?
It was my dad. And like, he just, you know, like would tell me to watch this person. Like, I don't know, like, too much about, you know, legends and football and all that type of stuff. But, you know, my dad, he used to turn on his highlights to be like, watch him. And he was basically like, kind of, he wants me to be like him. But, shoot, I don't really like emulate my game after anyone, but growing up, like I would watch bits and pieces of, you know, Barry Sanders, and sure, he's a great running back, and like I can kind of see myself, you know, like doing some certain stuff that he did. Like he's very shifty, run through tackles, all of that. But yeah, growing up, it was my dad just like turning on like short highlights of Barry Sanders.
Outside of Barry Sanders, who were some other running backs, you know, maybe that you were able to watch, you know, earlier in your life that you were like, okay, those are some other running backs that you really just liked?
I would say Marshawn Lynch. I watched him, you know, running people.
Beast mode.
Yeah. But really not anybody else. Like growing up, I wasn't really too big of like a person who like watched football. I just kind of just played it. And like my dad would like turn on highlights for me here and there. And like, I'd be like, oh yeah, those are some great plays they're making. But I didn't really watch anybody other than like, you know, Barry or Marshawn Lynch. Like those are probably the only two people that like highlights that like I would, you know, like pull up on my own and just watch.
So you didn't watch a lot of NFL football growing up. You also didn't know how quick you would be when you were running track back in the day in high school. What really then drew you to football? And when did you start to maybe realize, okay, I got a certain skill set where not only maybe I could go have a decent college career, a good college career, but maybe one day be in the NFL?
It was my dad. He put me in football when I was like 5, 6.
Love that.
And, you know, he just kept, you know, just pushing me to play the sport. And, you know, I love football, and I always like to, you know, play. And I played a bunch of sports. I played basketball and ran track at Little League and all of that. But my dad, he pushed football on me, and I just fell in love with the sport. And I didn't really start thinking about college until, you know, like my junior year of high school. Like up until then, like I was just playing football because I loved it. And, you know, I just wanted to play with my friends and all that type of stuff. And college was something that I like was like introduced to my junior year when I was thinking about, you know, going further with my football career. And that's when I started getting recruited by colleges, going to football camps and all of that. But, you know, growing up, my dad was the one who pushed me to play. And, you know, he just, you know, got me to love the game of football.
I know it's Notre Dame. So, like, when I ask you, why did you go to Notre Dame? The answer pretty much explains itself. But what really drew you, Jeremiah Love, to Notre Dame to make sure that you fell in love with the school and knew that it was the right decision?
My parents pushed Notre Dame from the very start. Whenever I first started getting recruited, my dad was like, have you heard from Notre Dame or stuff like that? At the time, they didn't Coach McCullough wasn't I don't think he was a running back coach at that time. So, like, I had to wait a little bit for them to contact me. And once they got in touch, you know, set up visits. And as soon as I came down for my first visit, it was like, school is really nice, small community, shoot, great academics. And my family loved the place, too. So it was just kind of like a combination of all the things I wanted. Great sports, great academics, you know, nice people. The people were very welcoming. And, like, the community was small. It's not a party school, nothing like that. So it kind of, you know, gave me everything I wanted out of a college or, like, a place to stay for, like, the next 3 to 4 years.
And we know they produced some really impressive running backs. You got to see firsthand in your freshman season the hard work of Audric Estime. What did you really learn from being in that same meeting room and kind of locker room of one Audric Estime day in and day out last year?
I learned what it takes to, you know, possibly get to the next level. Audric was a very hard worker. He came in every day. He got extra work every day. He came in, just, you know, worked to the best of his ability, and he practiced really hard. One of the things Audric, you know, like told me that I should really focus on doing was getting my weight up. And once my freshman season ended and spring started, that's what I was really focusing on. And it's helped greatly. But what I've took from Audric is that it's going to take a lot of work to get to the next level. And, you know, seeing him come in and work every day, I got a pretty good picture of, you know, what it's going to take for me to, you know, get to the next level and then be successful at the next level as well.
You got your feet wet last year. Now it seems like you're really comfortable in this sophomore season. And not only did you put the work in the off season off the field, but it's translating how it should be to on-field success. I know it's only 8 games into the season. The next 4 are massive. This team has college football playoff aspirations and then some. But I'm just wondering, so far, how do you evaluate your individual season with what you've been able to prove?
I feel like I've been doing pretty good this season. I don't really think, you know, like too high myself. I mean, like I'm doing pretty good, you know, scoring touchdowns, doing what I'm supposed to do, doing anything to help the team win. And I feel like, you know, I'm establishing myself as like one of the best running backs in the country, possibly one of the best players in the country. I mean, I believe that, you know, I'm the best of the best. And, you know, as time goes on, people will see that. But, you know, this season, it's been great. I feel like I've been doing pretty good and I'm just going to keep rolling and, you know, keep coming every week and trying to, you know, prove the people who I am and show the world who I am.
I feel like you're just scratching that surface and there's still more that you could do. You talk about being one of the best players in the country. When everything hits right for Jeremiah Love, what does that football player look like at your best?
If everything's hitting right, I would say I'm easily a Heisman candidate. I mean, I feel like I've got everything it takes to, you know, be recognized as, you know, one of the best players, if not the best player in college football. And, you know, as time goes on, I'm going to take advantage of those opportunities and I'm going to prove to people who I am, who I say I am.
Jeremiah Love with us. I got to ask you about the beginning of the season. So you guys made a big statement in a tough place to win up against A&M. And then we know what happened the week later up against NIU. Just wondering, that game, a lot of people thought it would derail the season, break the season. You guys haven't lost since. Why has that been? Why has that loss kind of made you guys dig deeper to then pull off what has been a 6-game winning streak since that loss?
You know, that loss, it really helped us mentally. I would say throughout that game, I mean, I feel like, you know, we were the more talented team. Like we have, you know, better players, but like, I believe that any team can win on any given day. Like if it doesn't matter who you are, if you're coming in and playing to the best of your ability, you may have a chance to win. And in that game, we just didn't play to our standard and they play an A-plus game for them. You know, as far as how we move forward after that loss, you know, we just came in every week, not underestimating, you know, any team we played against, and trying to, you know, focus more on ourselves and not look on to the other team. Cause, you know, it all starts within. And if we make sure that we're playing to the best of our abilities and, you know, playing to the Notre Dame standard, then I don't think there's anybody in the country that can beat us. I mean, we're just focusing on getting better every week. And I feel like that's really shown itself. Like, and you can look at all the positions all over the field and, you know, look at the team as a whole and you can really see how, you know, we've grown as a team and, you know, grown as like position groups throughout week after week. And, you know, that loss really contributed to our, you know, mental and never underestimating, you know, any team we play against, but, you know, just focusing on ourselves and trying to, you know, play to the Notre Dame standard, which we want to play to the Notre Dame standard.
And the neat part is not only did you guys as players show that resiliency, but you really responded to the coaching from Marcus Freeman, the head honcho at Notre Dame. But what do you want to say about your head football coach and Marcus Freeman and what he does for this football team?
First off, he's a great leader. He's a great person. You know, he tries to, you know, just get everybody to come together and to, you know, strive to achieve team glory. That's something he says a lot, you know, team glory. As long as we are, you know, like focusing, blocking out the noise and, you know, just trying to get better every week and, you know, trusting our guys, like, will the team cheat team glory? But, you know, Coach Free, like I say, he's a great person. Sometimes he doesn't even feel like he's, you know, he's a head coach. He's like such a down to earth person. But, you know, he is the leader of our program, and everybody on his team respects him. And, you know, I look up to him and, you know, hopefully, you know, we as players can continue to play play up to the, you know, Notre Dame standard and, you know, achieve an outcome that, you know, this program hasn't, you know, seen in a little while. So
Last year, your quarterback was Sam Hartman. You know, another transfer in this year, it's Riley Leonard coming over from Duke. How has your relationship grown from the offseason to now where you guys are sitting at 7-1 with your quarterback?
Riley's cool. You know, as weeks go on, you know, I get to know more about Riley, get to see more of him. And, he's really grown, you know, throughout this whole season. You know, as you know, we lost early on in the season, everybody, you know, how the media gets, you know, saying all types of bad stuff, but you know, Riley has, he's improved every single week, and he's continuing to show people, you know, that he's Riley Leonard. Like, Riley's just been improving. My relationship with him, and you know, everybody's relationship with him, I believe, has, you know, been growing for the better, you know, week after week. And he just comes in every day and grinds, and everybody sees that. Everybody respects Riley. And
Well, you guys could run the football pretty damn well together, and you complement each other nicely. I'm just curious, you know, when you get into the huddle and right, he's in command of the huddle. Like, what type of quarterback do you think you have when you get on that battlefield and you go to battle with Riley Leonard as your QB?
Shoot, first off, I have a quarterback that I can trust, you know, to make the right reads. A quarterback that can really do it all. He can run, he can pass, make great, smart decisions. You know, going into the huddle, like, have the everybody has, you know, utmost, you know, faith in that Riley will, you know, help this team, you know, achieve team glory.
Well, enjoy the bye week. Appreciate learning more about you today and seeing your growth from last year to this year. And we appreciate you stopping on by for a few minutes.
Thank you.
There he is, Jeremiah Love, joining us from the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. They're ranked 8th in the country, and they are 7-1, and they made Stu happy over the weekend as Stu was like 3 rows off the field, right in the end zone. Big seat for Stuart Kovacs. Prime time. It was awesome to see on social media. So appreciate Jeremiah Love giving Stu something to smile about this weekend with the way that his Yankees are playing up against the Dodgers, but at least he gave Stu 2 touchdowns. And obviously, hey, you look at Notre Dame, 7-1 football team. We'll see what they'll do the rest of the way. So good chat there. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. It is a Monday. We got some questions. I'll give you some answers. We do Onside Offside next.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
All right, it is Onside, Offside time. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You could always interact with us on social media at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B, where you could find our poll question today on Twitter. Who has been the most disappointing team in the NFL? The Dolphins, the Jets, the Bengals, and the Cowboys. I'll give you my answer later. 4% right now say the Dolphins, 18.5% say the Bengals, 19.5% say the drama Dallas choking Cowboys, and an overwhelming majority, 58.1%, say the New York Jets. All righty, Stu, what's shaking? What do we got cooking today?
All right, well, the Colts, they dropped a close one to their division rival Texans, losing 23-20, and quarterback Anthony Richardson is in a bit of hot water. In the third quarter, Richardson missed a play after a long scramble and made a surprising admission about why he took himself out of the game.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. Was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play, so I just, this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
So, Onside, Offside, you're okay with Anthony Richardson taking himself out for a play because he was exhausted?
I feel bad for Anthony Richardson. I feel really bad for him. Because he's fighting the hickey hex. That's what he's fighting right now. This guy has no chance to actually succeed because Hickey was out on him, then his team drafted him, and then he was all in on him. And last week, Hickey said, I put on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 no concern in the world, 10 all the concern in the world. Where's your concern about Anthony Richardson? And he said a 2. I thought it was like blasphemous that people...
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going after Anthony Richardson. And I said a few weeks ago, Anthony Richardson is a social media quarterback where there's like a few throws in the game where you're like jaw-dropping, unbelievable. This dude at one point in the game yesterday embodied what a social media quarterback was about. He was 2 of 13 at one point in the game for 81 yards and a touchdown. And that touchdown accounted for 69 out of his 81 passing yards. The dude has some skill, obviously. The dude has some tools, but he can't put it together. It's like he gets one piece to work correctly a game, and the guy is never healthy. But I have never heard of a quarterback taking themselves out because they're too tired. Like, Lamar Jackson runs more than anybody. Josh Allen puts the team on his back each and every week. Do you see Lamar Jackson say, "Hey, John Harbaugh, bring in the backup. I need a breather." Do you see Josh Allen go, "Hey, Sean McDermott, I need a breather. Get me out of the game." That's ridiculous to me. Crazy. So you're okay with Richardson taking himself out of a play because he was exhausted? Not a franchise quarterback. I'm not okay with this. I'm livid about this. Offside.
Offside.
That is crazy. You know, when Hickey joins us on Wednesday, and he joins us for the weekly spot, do you think he's going to ask out for 2 minutes of the segment if he's a little bit tired when I continue to just whoop him in these conversations? That's what I wonder. I just wonder. You know, maybe I'll bring a nice big cup of water for Hickey in case if he gets out of breath on Wednesday. So it could be okay. What a disgrace. Even the Pat McAfee show, like McAfee's the biggest Colt honk in the world, is even criticizing the quarterback today. Because I've never heard of a quarterback say, "Hey, I'm going to take myself out because I'm a little bit tired." And then I saw Shane Steichen. He didn't guarantee that you're going to see Anthony Richardson play up against the Vikings and start. You know, they're evaluating that. Team's better with Joe Flacco, let's be real. All right, next question.
All right, well, the Commanders beat the Bears on a final play Hail Mary, but fan video has now surfaced showing Bears defensive back Tyreek Stevenson taunting the Washington crowd. Even after the ball was snapped, Stevenson, who was one of the players who tipped the ball to Noah Brown, apologized after the game. Now today, Captain DJ Moore addressed it on 106.7 The Fan.
A few of the captains was talking about how we need to really address that. And I seen that he put something out about how he was sorry, but we still got to address it as a leadership group and in front of the team.
There are people that have called in that want him benched. I just don't know that that's the answer.
I mean, you can do that, and then, I don't know. I mean, it's a lesson learned for sure. He won't do that again. But if you bench him, it's just like that one play is, I mean, it's a big play, but that one play don't define him as a player.
All right, that's 106.7 The Score, by the way. Onside, offsides, the Bears should bench Stevenson for the next game.
So I obviously saw the play like everyone saw the play. It was ridiculous. But then afterwards, that video emerges of Stevenson. And I'm like, that can't be real. Because like I'm programmed now that everything is like, is edited. And it was real. And, you know, you got to do something. I don't know what is right. But yesterday is the exact reason why even when there are some positive moments, I know the end was a disaster. But when people start to like get back in on Matt Eberflus, why this guy just can't be the head coach. You're a defensive-minded coach. You got no control of your team. Your team's sloppy. And you allow a corner to be chirping with the fans and mocking the fans before the game is over. That doesn't happen on an Andy Reid team. That doesn't happen on a Bill Belichick team. That doesn't happen on a John Harbaugh team, a Jim Harbaugh team, Sean McVay. That don't happen with the great coaches in this league. So what can you do? Bare minimum, I wouldn't start him next week. I would bench him a quarter, maybe a half. But then it's like you're taken away from the team because he is a solid player. So I would bench him to start the game. I'd bench him for a half and then see if you could survive the half without him. But I wouldn't bench him for the entirety of the game. So I know that's a half-assed answer, but it's more benching. So, yeah, you know what? You got to do something. You can't make him run like a bunch of gassers after practice. This is in 1986. All right, so the Bears should bench Stevenson. Yeah, they should on sides.
Well, the Broncos beat the Panthers 28-14 on Sunday, holding the now 1-7 Panthers to just 285 total yards and extending the lead to 21 points just before the two-minute warning. Now, after the game, Panthers DB J.C. Horn, who, of course, is the son of Joe Horn, who is a star under Sean Payton in New Orleans, he angrily confronted Payton for running up the score. Now, onside, offside, Sean Payton was wrong for running up the score.
No, he wasn't. And it may annoy you. You may not like it. But the game is played for 60 minutes. And even though I'm not a big Sean Payton fan, you have to change the culture of the Denver Broncos, and they're going up against an inferior football team. So J.C. Horn, who I like, and it's just a shame that he can't stay healthy, if you have a problem with it, well, how about you tell your team to stop it? Okay? This is not participation football. This is not flag football. This is not peewee football. This is not eighth grade football. This is the NFL. So don't do, oh, you shouldn't be running up the score against us. So Sean Payton was wrong for running up the score. So I think this will be the first time this year I defend him. I will go offside.
Offside.
Well, Patriots head coach Jerod Mayo got in some heat last week after calling his team soft. And some even said that Mayo could be one and done in New England. However,
that was stupid.
The team responded nicely with a surprising win over the disappointing Jets yesterday. And Mayo praised his team's mental toughness.
I thought the guys, again, showed the resilience that they've developed over the past few weeks. Really proud of the guys. There was a lot of noise and a lot of chatter. And I'm very appreciative of just their attitude and professionalism on an everyday basis. I thought it was good.
So onside, offside, Mayo's soft comments actually was a good motivator for the Patriots.
Can I give you a stat, which may be my favorite stat in NFL history, before I answer that question, Stu?
Of course.
Dan Orlovsky tweeted us out. Scored 20-plus points, didn't turn it over, allowed fewer than 250 yards. In NFL history, teams are 750-1, including the playoffs, when generating that box score. The only loss, the Jets yesterday.
Yikes.
So let me talk about my guy, Jerod Mayo, my coach. I didn't like his soft comments. And here's why I didn't like his soft comments. I'm fine challenging your team, and I knew that's what he was doing. But you got to take some ownership for that as well. And I didn't think he did that in the excerpt that we heard. So Mayo's soft comments was actually a good motivator for this team. I will say on sides, because David Andrews last week said something along the lines, when Bill used to give us crap, we'd used to say, hey, I'm going to prove him wrong. And the Patriots, even though the Jets are a disaster, even though the Patriots still can't block, even though they still can't catch, you could tell that was a more unified team. So I'm now looking back on it. I still don't take back what I said about how he should have said it. And he needs to take some ownership of the team being soft. But yeah, I do think it factored into the Patriots winning yesterday. Now, I'm not going to be stupid. The Jets also suck. And they could mess up a one-car funeral procession right now. But those comments clearly annoyed that locker room and galvanized that locker room a little bit. So yeah, I thought it was a good motivator for the team. On sides. How do you like that, the Jets? Ooh, disaster. Something stinky here. It's the Jets. What do we got?
Tua returned for the Dolphins this week, and the offense woke back up with Tua under center. After averaging just 12 points a game in his four-game absence, the offense put up 27 points with nearly 400 total yards. Tua led the NFL in yards last season and has finished top five in yards per game in each of the last two seasons. So onsides, offsides, it's time to start considering Tua a top seven NFL quarterback when he is healthy.
So I said this last week, but I took back a take because last year I said Tyreek Hill is the Dolphins' most valuable player. After seeing Tua not on the field, I said it, even though I believe that still pound for pound Tyreek is their best player, Tua is their most valuable. You saw the Dolphins look like a competent offense once again. They still lost the game. But Here's been my take about Tua. He's good. He's not great, but he's good in the NFL. Do I think he's a top seven quarterback? No. I think he's like in that maybe at best 8, and I wouldn't put him at 8 right now, to 12. He's in that kind of grouping, 8 to 12, where I think he's closer to 12 than I would say 8. If you had to make me go one side or the other. But I think that guy is right like at like 11, sometimes infringing on 10. But I think he is closer to 12 than he would be as 8 when you look at the, you know, the 8 to 12 range of quarterbacks. So when you ask me, is it time to start considering Tua a top 7 QB when healthy? He's like never healthy. So like that, it's tough to just say when healthy, but I would go offside. I still think there's 7 better quarterbacks in the league than Tua Tagovailoa.
Offside!
All right, the Big 12 now has 4 teams in the top 25, including BYU, Iowa State, Kansas State, and new entry Colorado, with BYU and Iowa State both in the top 11 for the playoff seedings. Colorado and BYU don't face another ranked opponent all year, while Iowa State and K-State face each other in the final week. So onside, offsides, the Big 12 will get at least 2 teams in the playoffs.
I'm going to say offside. The only way I think you get 2 Big 12 teams in is if, let's say, BYU is undefeated, let's just say. They're undefeated in the conference championship game, and then the Big 12 champion is not BYU, and BYU loses to whoever that Big 12 champion is, just using BYU for an example, because right now they're undefeated, then that's the way I could see 2 teams get in. But in all likelihood, I think that the winner of the Big 12 will have a loss attached to their resume, and whoever does win the Big 12 will also have a loss attached to their resume, and I don't think that loss is going to come for the first time in the Big 12 championship game. So I would say that it's still likely that one team comes from the Big 12. So when you say they'll get at least 2 teams in the playoff, I will go offside.
Offside.
Now, speaking of Colorado, Coach Prime has his Buffaloes bowl eligible at 6-2 with 4 games left. Now, today, ESPN's Stephen A. Smith said that Coach Prime should be the coach of the year in college football. So onsides, offsides, Coach Prime is the coach of the year right now.
Now, 2 things could be true. Coach Prime is a Coach of the Year candidate in college football. True. Stephen A. Smith, though, saying that, you laugh at. True. I like Stephen A. Smith. I'm a pro Stephen A. Smith guy, let me be clear. But I was watching that segment live today, and you could tell Stephen A. Smith watches maybe 0 college football. Because also in that answer, in that diatribe, and Molly tried to save him towards the end of the show, he was talking about how Coach Prime should have been hired by Alabama or A&M. Well, DeBoer, I know they have 2 losses this year. He was in a national championship game last year at Washington. And Mike Elko is 7-1 right now at A&M. And this is coming, by the way, from someone, me, who advocated 2 years ago for Coach Prime to get the Auburn job. I wanted to see Coach Prime coach in the SEC. So when I hear Stephen A. Smith say that Alabama or A&M should have hired Coach Prime, I kind of laugh a little bit. We know why Stephen A. Smith is saying this, because Coach Prime should be a candidate, but Stephen A. Smith gets incredible access from Coach Prime and their friends. But the coach of the year right now through 8 games, and this could change, but through 8 games, is Kurt Cignetti at Indiana. They're undefeated. So that's the coach of the year to me. Coach Prime is a candidate. If you made me vote right now, it would be Cignetti. So when you ask me, Coach Prime is the coach of the year right now in college football, offside.
Offside.
All right, last one. Game 3 of the World Series is just a few hours away.
Here comes the Yankees.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Dodgers are up 2-0, and they got some good news that Shohei Ohtani is expected to play despite hurting his shoulder at the end of Game 2. Now, Aaron Judge, he is a pathetic 1-for-9.
I hear the disgust in your voice.
6 strikeouts in the series. He's hitting just 150 this postseason and has a career playoff average of just 199 with an OPS of just 740. Onsides, offsides, it's fair to call Aaron Judge a postseason choker.
What are your thoughts on this, Stu?
I think so. He's been terrible, and he's one of the best players, if not the best player in baseball during the regular season, and he's way below that in the postseason.
So I would say he's a postseason 0 right now. That's what I would say. It's like, a choker, you got to make me believe that you're going to be great. Aaron Judge in the postseason, he's great in the regular season, but I don't believe he's going to be great in the postseason. And at the game one, I was on the fan in New York, and I'm like, that loss, I know everyone's a bitch about Boone and the bullpen and all that, and trust me, there's things to complain about, but Aaron Judge, he can't hit water if he thought of a boat right now. It's crazy. So I guess I lean on sides here. It's fair to call Aaron Judge a postseason choker, but the first word I thought of was a postseason zero. And it's a shame because he is unbelievable. Unbelievable. I have praised Aaron Judge all year long, but in the postseason, brutal. And the Dodgers could win when Ohtani isn't at his best. The Yankees cannot win. And don't tell me, oh, they beat the Royals. They beat the Guardians. It was a bye to the World Series. They can't beat a team like LA if Aaron Judge isn't the Aaron Judge that we all know he's capable of being. So I will go onsides on that. All right, good onsides, offsides. This is Zach Gilbert on the Infinity Sports Network. We will get into the greatness that we saw on the football field yesterday between the Commanders and the Bears. Next, update time first. We'll send it over to the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. What a crazy game between the Bears and the Commanders the other day. So the first chapter of Caleb Williams against Jaden Daniels. And when the Bears are at the goal line, and they handed that ball off to that offensive lineman who was playing as a fullback, I couldn't believe it. I was like, why do the Bears try to get cute when you don't need to get cute? And even though they eventually got a stop, got the ball back, and then scored a touchdown, you just see why the Bears, once again, are a poorly coached team. How one of their corners, Stevenson, is yapping with the fans. With the fans. Before the game is over. And like, Stu, it was bonkers to me. Like, we all saw the Hail Mary. How Daniels didn't get taken down like two times was unreal. But then when he gets the ball off and then it gets a fortuitous bounce and the Commanders catch it, it's one of those moments where even if you're not a Bears or a Commanders fan, where I was watching with two buddies, one's an Eagles fan, one's a Bills fan, I'm a Patriot fan. You're all like, oh my God, you couldn't believe it. It makes you jump off the couch. But then you see the videos. And by the way, I thought Romo was great in the play before the Hail Mary, pointing out you could still get some yards there. And then Nance had a great call. But when you see a player who is literally yapping with the fans, the ball is snapped. It's coming his way, and he's like, oh, crap, I got to go try to make a play. You kind of get what you deserved. Like, karma is the guy on the Chiefs, right, what Taylor Swift says? Karma is the guy on the Bears. That's what I just saw right there. So, Stu, kind of take me through and relive your emotions, because I know Stu is always very emotional, very energetic, Stuart Kovacs is all the time. How did you kind of process that one between the Commanders and the Bears, and then when you saw afterwards the dopey defensive back who was yapping with the Commanders fans? That to me, that's one of the biggest blunders in the history of the NFL that I've ever seen.
So I thought the game was over, so I turned it off. I did not see it live until I saw on Twitter.
It was the only thing going on, too.
The Raider game was ending, and we were getting ready for the Devils game. So we were trying to make a little switcheroo. So again, you think at that point the game's over. But I did see once.
You know what, Stu? I'm actually proud that you admitted that. Because if you weren't a man, you could have just said, hey, I saw
it. It's a great play. I couldn't believe it. I was sitting on my couch. No.
Yeah.
I saw on Twitter that people were freaking out. So then I switched over, and then I saw the replay, you know. I guess probably a minute after it happened.
Wow. You turned it off.
Turned it off.
Turned it off. It was crazy. And then how about when you saw Stevenson?
Yes. And then I guess maybe half hour later, I saw the video. I was like, this can't be real. And then you just see him taunting the fan and then run over and tip it up. I'm like, of course. And of course, he was the one that tipped it up. He had to be someone that had an impact on the play.
I thought I was watching a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. I'm like, this is scripted. This isn't real. Like, I was expecting, Curb to play underneath the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. That's what I was expecting. I thought, okay, just a really good Bears fan, you know, wanted to provide a moment of levity so they were able to quickly, edit the whole video and put him on the screen and have him doing that. And you know what the crazy part is? The Commander fan was beaten down for so many years. There was apathy with that fan base. They didn't even show up. They were so disgusted with who their POS owner was. To see that place rocking yesterday was so much fun. And I know this is a second-year player, you know, young player in this league, but to have him be yapping it up with the Commanders fans, the first time like the Commanders fans are actually back and rocking, it even makes it funnier. It does. Now, that's a miserable loss for the Bears. It is. But my takeaway is it just shows you why the Bears, even with the talent they have, and they could be a good team this year, they got to blow out this coaching staff at the end of the year. They do. You got Getsy with that dumb play call to the offensive lineman when you're getting cute when you don't need to be cute. And then you got Matt Eberflus having an undisciplined football team at the end of the game where one player, Stevenson, is more concerned about taunting the fans before the game is even over. That's on the coaching staff. It is a terrible coaching staff. And just when people finally start to get back in on this coaching staff, they show you why there is nothing that should be able to be happening this year that makes you believe at the end of the year that this is the best coaching staff that they could put together. There are better names out there. Now, I don't know if the Bears will pony up for some of the big names, but Belichick, Vrabel, it's like, how is Jim Harbaugh not coaching this team? They didn't make a run at Jim Harbaugh. There are better names out there. Now, go get Ben Johnson. I don't even know what he could be as head coach. A damn good offensive coordinator. There are better names out there. That's an undisciplined football team. But I will say this. I think something very big happened out of yesterday. Because I do think Caleb Williams is the right guy for the Bears. I am a believer in Caleb Williams. Not like all in, but I do believe in Caleb Williams. And I don't know if there's been a bigger fan in the national media of Jaden Daniels than me. I sat here for 2 months at the end of the season saying, lose is the Pats. Because I'd rather have Jaden Daniels than Drake May. And I think Drake May is going to end up being good if the Patriots don't get him killed. And they actually get him someone that could block and catch a football. You know, crazy stuff. But that's what I'm asking for. Not asking for much, just for little things. But it's good that both those quarterbacks, Williams and Daniels, are in the NFC. Because you look at the quarterbacks in the NFC. Like, Jalen Hurts is good. I wouldn't call him elite. Dak Prescott, good. Wouldn't call him elite. You look in the North, Love has potential to be elite. Elite. But he's got to show more of it. You know, he's a gunslinger right now. And he's had some health issues, as we saw yesterday. Goff is good, not elite. You know, you go through it. You know, Kirk Cousins, good, not elite. Brock Purdy, good, not elite. Stafford, good, not elite. You know, Kyler Murray, solid, not elite. I don't know if there's an elite quarterback in the NFC, if I'm being honest. So you get Jaden Daniels looking like he can be elite. Caleb Williams, when I think he gets better coaching, you'll see more very good slash great Caleb compared to the up and down inconsistent Caleb Williams. But in the AFC, like, you got some great quarterbacks. Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Lamar Jackson. Let me go on and on and on. So with the signs that Williams and Daniels have displayed so far, it makes me encouraged that we can get a little bit more of a balanced playing field, because a lot of the great quarterbacks are now in the AFC, and I don't know if there's a great quarterback in the NFC right now before you got to see Jaden Daniels step on the field. And he's still got more to prove. So when you have a crazy game like that play on out the way that it did, and even though it wasn't the most offensive game that we've ever seen, for it to end with that moment, pretty damn cool. You saw some of the optimism with the Bears, and then it became quickly misery as the Commanders snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. And that is a gut-wrenching, and I mean a gut-wrenching loss for the Bears. Alrighty, Zach Gelb here with you, Infinity Sports Network. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we asked the poll question. We'll get into it next. Considering the expectations, who's the most disappointing team in the NFL this year? We'll get to that when we're back in five.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.